theological reflection, a personal journey. So we began this month with Bruce Heyer's reflection on ecological humanism, and then 2 weeks ago, Reverend Deborah Falk gave us an orientation to theological reflection as it relates to the Unitarian Universalist tradition. And just last week, Reverend Suzanne Wasilchuk offered us a reflection on the wide range of perspectives on Easter and its meanings. So my comments this morning hope to build on this while I approach the topic from a personal perspective. When I first saw that the theme for April was theological reflection, I realized that I really didn't know what this meant. Now, so searching, I first came across this definition. Theological reflection is the process by which we find meaning in our experience by connecting it to God's activity in the world. Now, since my own spiritual approach is non-theistic, this wasn't really a very helpful definition. I then found another definition that seemed more meaningful. Theological reflection is the discipline of exploring our individual and corporate experience in conversation with the wisdom of the heritage, of a religious heritage. The conversation is a genuine dialogue that seeks to hear from our own beliefs, actions, and perspectives, as well as from those of the tradition. So my personal experience, combined with that of all of us, is to be considered in light of what Unitarian Universalism has brought to the table. And when Unitarians and Universalists merged in 1961, the question of theological differences was not even sorted through, and not really talked about in UU congregations. Harvey Cox, a prominent Protestant theologian, said that Unitarian Universalism was thick on ethics, but thin on theology. And this kind of critique eventually resulted in the Unitarian Universalist Association's 2005 Commission on Appraisal Report, Engaging Our Theological Diversity. In the report, they noted, "One fact has become clear in the course of our conversations with UUs concerning the issue of theology. With rare exceptions, conversations about beliefs and theology are not regular features of our congregational life." Still, as UU minister Richard Gilbert, who is author of the Building Your Own Theology series, writes, "If we are living, breathing, hurting, laughing, crying, questing human beings, it's impossible not to be theologians." While the traditional definition of theology is the study of God, Gilbert suggests that it can also mean a field of study, thought, and analysis that discusses religious truth. And the crucible for building our own theology is the congregation. Anthony Robinson writes, "Theological reflection is a way to align what we believe with who we are. Such reflection helps a congregation preach what it practices and practice what it preaches. We neglect the responsible use of theology at our own peril." And because theology in our tradition is not prescribed, it is incumbent upon each of us to build our own theology. By doing so, we create a more reliable internal compass that orients us to our true north. By doing so, we are better able to align our actions with our values. This is a process that assists us in determining what we believe. Now, in the mid to late 1980s, Forrest Church launched a new era of theological reflection through his writings. His image of one light shining through countless stained glass windows throughout the cathedral of the world suggested that the richness and diversity of theological reflection and discourse was in service of disclosing this wisdom: one light, many paths. And as UU theologian James Luther Adams put it, everyone is a theologian, either conscious or unconscious, in the sense that everyone has some conception of the nature of reality, of the demands of reality, and of those elements in reality that support or threaten meaningful existence. Now, the Touchstones Project was created to facilitate theological reflection as UU congregations such as ours participate in the work of constructive theology. So, as we explore a different theme each month, we are engaging in theological reflection. And my own personal journey has certainly been enriched by the preparation of a monthly service over the past couple of years. In 2005, when I joined LUF, I found the principles and sources offered a substantial framework for a journey that I had already been on for many years, asking, where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? And the heart of my approach is really principle four, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And that is bookended by principle one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, though I tend to extend that to include all sentient life. And principle seven, respect for the interdependent web of existence, of all existence, of which we are part. All of the principles and sources, including our new eighth principle, have provided significant insights for my own exploration and hopefully evolution. Now, I did come across at one point a fairly simple definition for theological reflection, and one that I seem to have tried to operate from. Patricia O'Killen and John DeBeer write, "Theological reflection is the process of seeking meaning." Each of us will seek meaning in our own way, following our own path. I want to share some of my personal journey, showing the links between our UU sources and my conception of the nature of reality, to use James Luther Adams' expression. Now, my first foray into theological reflection involved leaving the United Church at age 14 when I realized that I could not accept and believe the Apostles' Creed. The source for this, of course, are Jewish and Christian teachings. Now, after graduating from university, I did some spiritual exploration using LSD and a guide based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. This did lead me to a sense of the oneness of everything, an early introduction to the interdependent web. Now, the sources here were our direct experience and wisdom from the world religions. Now, this experience did lead to a variety of approaches. The tarot was based on the Kabbalah, the I Ching based on Taoism and Confucianism, the Tao Te Ching itself is an important source, as well as a variety of other different texts. Paul Foster Case, in his book, The Tarot, postulates a universal conscious energy, which I did find quite intriguing. The source is here, Jewish teachings and world religions. Now, science has also been an important part of my own exploration. Fritjof Capra, in his 1974 book, The Tao of Physics, found a connection between Eastern traditions and quantum physics, and noted, "The whole universe appears as a dynamic web of inseparable energy patterns." The sources here, humanist teachings, science, and world religions. And in the mid-1970s, I began to explore Buddhist meditation and teachings, particularly through the lens of a Canadian teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, who was able to encompass and bridge Buddhist and Western forms of awakening. So the sources here, prophetic men and women, Jewish and Christian teachings, and world religions. So we're already being somewhat diverse. And I expect many of us are familiar with the phrase, "May the Force be with you." In 1977, the movie Star Wars introduced the concept of the Force, defined as follows. "The Force is a mysterious energy created by life that binds the galaxy together." Christian Wiman notes, "Art is so often better at theology than theology is." Now, throughout my adult life, nature, music, art, literature, science, have all been sources for my explorations of truth and meaning. And Karen Armstrong suggests this: "Theology is, or should be, a species of poetry. You have to open yourself to a poem with a quiet, receptive mind, in the same way you might listen to a difficult piece of music." And with all of this, the source, of course, is direct experience. And for close to 40 years, from the mid-1970s on, much of my energy focused on social action work, from union involvement, gay community activism, HIV/AIDS activism and education, and LGBT health. And during this time, I was exposed to indigenous spirituality and found many commonalities there with Buddhist thought. And in retrospect, this period I can see to be engaging all of the principles as well as all of the sources. As the reading from Rilke noted, "Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer." Well, I hope that I still have time for that to happen. Now, earlier I mentioned an interest in the term universal conscious energy. Many years ago, Susan Tierra and I talked about doing a service on consciousness. We never did get around to doing that, but my interest has continued in reflecting on that question. And really, consciousness is at the heart of my own look at the conception of the nature of reality. An important source for this exploration was the 2005 book by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, which is called "The Universe in a Single Atom: The Convergence of Science and Spirituality." In the prologue to the book, he talks about his personal journey into science. He writes, "As in science, so in Buddhism, understanding the nature of reality is pursued by means of critical investigation. If scientific analysis were conclusively to determine certain claims in Buddhism to be false, then we must accept the findings of science and abandon those claims. And I would suggest the alternative must be considered as well. Reductionist science that rejects consciousness as nothing more than brain chemistry must consider the findings of subjective experience. The Dalai Lama looks at the fundamental assumptions underpinning scientific and spiritual approaches. For example, in considering the concept of karma, he writes, from the scientific view, the theory of karma may be a metaphysical assumption, but it is no more so than the assumption that all of life is material and originated out of pure chance. And he goes on to devote a significant portion of the book to the question of consciousness, and notes, in Buddhism, there is no recognition of the presence of something like the soul that is unique to humans. From the perspective of consciousness, the difference between humans and animals is a matter of degree and not of kind. And I would say that our direct experience can affirm that. And he goes on, in order for the study of consciousness to be complete, we need a methodology that would account not only for what is occurring at the neurological and biochemical levels, but also for the subjective experience of consciousness itself. Now, the following year, in 2006, a book appeared with the intriguing title, The God Theory, Universes, Zero-Point Fields, and What's Behind It All, by Bernard Haich. And in the preface to the book, he writes, the single difference between the theory I propose and the ideas current in modern astrophysics is that I assume that an infinite conscious intelligence pre-exists. And this, of course, brought about echoes of the universal conscious energy that had been suggested by Paul Foster Case. Haich goes on to propose that ultimately it is consciousness that is the origin of matter, energy, and the laws of nature in this universe and all others that may exist. Now, there's much in the book that is meaningful, although I do find his conceptualization of God a little too anthropomorphic at times. That's what I get for trying to use a fancy word. Now, there are many articles that explore the role of consciousness in examining the nature of reality. And most recently, I came across a piece from January of this year from Bishara magazine, and it's called Consciousness as the Ground of Being. Physicist Federico Fagan and Giacomo Moro Dariano have developed a new physical model of reality in which consciousness, not matter, is seen as the foundational principle. Dariano has been able to show that quantum physics derives entirely from quantum information. From quantum physics, we then derive what we can measure in our physical world. So in this theory, consciousness does not arise from the information generated in the physical world. It is instead a quantum phenomenon that creates the information that we then perceive as the physical world. Physicists are now pretty much agreed that matter is information. Essentially, the particles, the atoms and molecules that were thought to constitute stuff don't exist as objects at all. they exist only as states of the fundamental quantum fields, which interact with each other and then create everything else. We think we live in a world where there are objects, separate entities, which interact with each other in space and time. But nowadays, we have to think of objects as states of quantum fields that interact with each other. But at the same time, they are not separate from the field. In the proposed model, these quantum fields are conscious. Everything is made of an undivided energy. Feigen calls this unified field one, a capital O, one. This one sounds very similar to Hesse's God. And in both of these cases, scientific inquiry has led to spiritual insights. And I see here the convergence of science and spirituality that was suggested by the Dalai Lama. Now, these theories and models just lead on to more questions about the role of consciousness in the interdependent web of all existence. So this is where my theological reflection journey has been leading. And at the moment, it provides for me a working hypothesis that can only be explored through ongoing questioning and reflection. Now, I'm certainly not proposing that I have found some major insight, simply an approach that's meaningful to me. And in the words of Frederick Buchner, theology, like fiction, is largely autobiographical. We explore and reflect as individuals, but it is by sharing and comparing that we can all learn from each other. As part of this UU community, we do not have answers provided from on high. We do have principles that give us a framework for asking questions and sources that can help lead us to answers. Remembering that answers always lead on to new questions. So may we all, individually and collectively, continue our explorations with the aim of growing in spirit, nurturing inclusive relationships, and acting for a just and sustainable world. And I can't resist closing with this quote from author Terry Pratchett. "One good thing about being a cat, apart from the extra lives, was that the theology was a lot simpler. May it be so."